Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, where this week we ride it right off the rails in a town called Lincoln.
We've been here so long, the town was first called Buchanan, I think, before we...
You see, the trouble was we tried recording four shows in one day. This is show four.
Anybody see a
that
tree?
Really catch
yeah,
on.
Right. Yeah. Right. You have a registered sycamore.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm not okay.
Because no one wants an unregistered sycamore. I've said this many times. Welcome to game four, ladies and gentlemen. Our fourth game today. Anything can happen. But that's all there is, right? It just couldn't have gotten sillier, right?
The favorite Christmas dish, boiled live turkey.
Yeah.
Get you right in the spirit.
So come back with us to Lincoln for show four. Says You, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. At least two rocket-propelled grenades hit the main Ba'ath Party building in Damascus, Syria today. Residents say the attack took place just before dawn when the building was mostly empty. This is the first insurgent attack inside the Syrian capital since an uprising against President Bashar Assad began 8 months ago. In a recorded interview with London's Sunday Times, President Assad insists his troops are not cracking down on civilians. Larry Miller reports.
Assad denies his forces are overreacting despite the killing of an estimated 3,500 people.
The policy of the government, we don't have any policy to be harsh.
The Syrian president blames militants for the killings.
So we're not talking about peaceful demonstrations, we are talking about militants. Whenever you have militants, you have killing.
Yet Assad concedes there may have been mistakes.
But when you have instability, you may have some problems, you may have some mistakes.
In the Sunday Times interview, Assad accuses the Arab League of creating a pretext for Western intervention in Syria, which he vows to fight to the death. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
Hundreds of students demonstrated in eastern Afghanistan today following a proposed agreement that would see the presence of U.S. troops after 2014. NPR's Ahmed Shafi reports.
Afghan officials say hundreds of people, mostly students, from the University of Nangarhar province blocked the main highway linking Kabul to eastern Afghanistan. The students were shouting, "Death to America and death to Karzai." The chief of police for Nangarhar province says the protesters were dispersed without any injury. Afghan political and community leaders endorsed the idea of a strategic partnership with the United States in a traditional grand assembly, or Loya Jirga, which ended on Saturday. It also called on the U.S. and NATO troops to end night raids, which have caused widespread resentment among Afghan civilians. Ahmed Shafi, NPR News, Kabul.
President Obama arrived home to the White House early this morning after a 9-day visit to the Asia Pacific. He returns to a Washington still divided on how to cut federal deficits. 12 lawmakers assigned to find ways to trim the budget are supposed to pass something by Wednesday. As a practical matter, they must agree tomorrow to give the Congressional Budget Office time to analyze a plan. They aren't even negotiating this weekend, at least not publicly. But political analyst Larry Sabato with the University of Virginia says don't give up yet.
There's a lot of doom and gloom out there in the commentary, and maybe it's justified, but I've also learned over the years that you ought to wait before you write somebody's obituary. You need a cold, dead body first.
A failure to reach agreement would trigger an automatic reduction in federal spending. The cuts wouldn't take place until January of 2013. A Christian group sponsored a forum for Republican presidential candidates in Des Moines, Iowa last night. Six of them attended and agreed all expressed their opposition to both abortion and same-sex marriage. This is NPR News from Washington. The chancellor of the University of California, Davis, says she's forming a task force to investigate the police response to a protest Friday in support of the Occupy Wall Street movement. A police officer in riot gear used pepper spray at close range against protesters who were sitting on the ground. The incident was caught on a cell phone and is spreading virally across the internet. Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval spent yesterday touring parts of Reno devastated by a 2,000-acre wildfire. Kate McGee with member station KUNI reports Firefighters have now contained about 80% of the blaze.
Officials say they hope to contain the entire fire by midweek. 32 structures were destroyed in the blaze. Officials say at times, firefighters battled flames 100 feet high. They estimate 4,000 homes were saved due to efforts of first responders. Reno resident Jolene Falcone says she was woken by her smoke detector early that morning.
We just have a lot of smoke, wind damage. We could see a lot of the houses over here burning. It's terrible to watch your friends' houses burn.
Nearly 10,000 people were evacuated. They are now allowed to return to their homes. For NPR News, I'm Kate McGee in Reno.
Every year, about 80 students from around the world are given scholarships to attend Oxford in England. This year, many of them are from the United States. The Rhodes Trust announced this morning that 32 Americans will be Rhodes Scholars entering next October. The scholarships were created in 1902 by the will of British philanthropist Cecil Rhodes. The value of the scholarship averages about $50,000 a year. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy. Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. From Bemis Hall in Lincoln, Massachusetts, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Hollywood bigwig, the actor's actor, Mr. Tom Kemp. Philanthropic guru and adverb advocate, Francine Akbar. And television host, the prince of pronouns, Mr. Barry Nolan. And who's the captain tonight?
Oh, I will be.
Francine.
I guess it's...
To my left, team two, producer, performer, raconteur, Arnie Reisman. Columnist, critic, pun, and funster, Carolyn Faye Fox. And executive coach, author, the laugh you love to hear, Miss Paula Lyons. Who's going to take on duties tonight?
Arnie.
Yes.
Arnie will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Bob Perlstein of Newton, Massachusetts, brings us an interesting challenge we call shop talk. Here are terms used in various trades or professions. For 10 points, given the endeavor, please define the term.
Oh.
Carolyn, from the brewing industry, what might be meant by the angel's share?
The angel's share. That would be the amount of beer that the workers can drink.
That's an excellent guess. It's not correct, but that's a great guess.
All right, the angel's share.
The angel's share.
It's the amount of beer sent off to the investors.
You know, she's racking up points here.
For creativity alone.
Does it have anything to do with the height?
Well, it has to do with the part that goes to the angels, certainly.
No kidding. Oh, you mean share.
Thus the name.
Yeah. Yeah. The
is it the
share.
Part that evaporates into the air?
Yeah.
Oh. It is, exactly.
Thank you, Paula.
10 points. Very good, Paula.
Excellent.
It's the percentage of whiskey that evaporates while maturing in the cask.
Did you just say whiskey?
Yes.
Oh. Did you say this was a brewing question? Well, I guess so. Okay.
I guess
that's
so.
Right.
I was thinking
distilling.
Beer.
Let's say distilling. I love this one, Tom. From gardening, what might finger blight be?
Finger blight.
Yes.
I think that's... Is that what... You're not supposed to touch certain plants with your hands when they're wet.
Oh, I thought he had it. That's not it. I thought he had it. That's not
I thought I had it too, Richard.
Yeah, really. finger blight.
Now, your wife would know this, and you can't see her.
And I can't see her.
Was he on it when he was talking about you're not supposed to touch?
That's exactly.
And is it the pedal part?
No.
No?
But it is about not supposed to touch.
You're not supposed to touch it and because you give it the blight, the plant. The plant doesn't give you the blight.
No. Nobody gives anybody anything. One of the few instances.
Richard.
It's going to be one of those.
No, I'm not even going to go there.
but it is about, certainly is about touching it.
It's about touching it. Yeah, and you shouldn't.
Anybody up here want to take a shot?
Are we talking like belladonna poison or anything?
No,
like that?
No. Why shouldn't you touch it, audience? No, it's not yours.
It's not yours?
It is not yours.
Finger blight?
Finger blight is petty plant larceny.
Petty plant Wow.
It is loss of fruits and vegetables to passersby who casually help themselves to your crop. What is the matter with these people?
See, you touch something that's not yours, you could get something.
Yes. I suppose.
Oh,
give them
God.
4 points because you could get something. We'll get away. That is finger blight.
That's
larceny, funny. I've never heard in.
Unhand that hibiscus.
All right, Arnie.
It's more, yeah. You know.
From aviation.
From aviation.
Yes. Who or what is Iron Mike?
Iron Mike.
Yes.
Sounds very familiar.
Does it now?
Iron Mike.
Is he a pilot?
Is it? It's actually an instrument, no?
Yes, it is.
Like the old joystick. It's.
Well. You're getting there.
Yeah, it's what flies the plane.
It is exactly what flies the plane. It is the autopilot.
The autopilot.
Iron Mike is the autopilot.
Autopilot.
10 points. Very good. Try this one, Francine. In medicine, what might be meant by a meeting of the knife and gun club?
Oh. The knife and gun
I think your husband's
club.
There now. The emergency room.
The emergency room.
It's pulling duty in the emergency room.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's a meeting of the knife and gun club. Boy, you guys are eating this one alive. Very good. All right, we'll make it a little harder.
Although
Paula?
I did have a friend who worked in an emergency room who told me that a man came in with an axe in his head.
And we need to know this for what reason?
Well, it
and
would
he said
be
what?
The
did you
knife,
see a tree
gun,
come in?
And axe club.
Oh, okay. Did you see it? Anybody see a tree?
Because that could really catch
yeah,
on.
Right. Right. You have a registered sycamore?
Yeah. I'm a lumberjack
because
and I'm not okay.
Because no one wants an unregistered sycamore. I've said this many times.
No.
Welcome to game four, ladies and gentlemen. Our fourth game today. Anything can happen. Try this one, Paula, from cooking. What might be meant by sous vide? Oh.
Sous vide?
Yes, S-O-U-S-V-I-D-E, sous vide.
Well, it's cooked very, very slowly at a very low temperature.
No, not really. That's not what it. That's not where we're going here. You're right about that. It is cooked at a low temperature.
What
cooked
is
gently.
Sous vide?
In water.
Yes, but there's more to it than that.
In a bag.
Now we're getting someplace.
Okay.
And what about the vide part?
It's something that's
alive.
You see the bag.
You see the bag. No,
right.
You're not seeing it.
Something alive is in the bag. No.
Well,
I
hope
something alive.
Yeah. Well, you know, we cook live things all the time.
The favorite Christmas dish, boiled live turkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get you right in the spirit.
You got... You're about 6 or 7 points there, but you're missing a pretty important element of it is a method of food preparation, but...
But it's the kind of food?
How
it's,
do they...
It's meat.
Well, how do they do it?
How
volume.
Do they do
volume.
It? Yeah.
Volume.
How do we do it?
Don't do that again.
Okay.
Don't do that again.
I'm sorry, Antonio, if I just blow out your ears, but...
Right. How do they do it?
Vide?
So it's what the element we're missing is what's in the bag?
No, It's no, that's it's not like, the element you're
what
missing.
What is the bag? Is that
well,
what's
no,
missing?
The other side knows. I'm going to, you're going to get 6 points. Go to the other side.
It's imagine at a very low temperature.
That's what you
that's
said.
That. Oh. They already
it's
said that.
Baked in a bag, that. An empty bag.
We already said
Wait,
that.
We said
what
that.
Element are they missing, audience?
Over a very long time.
It is vacuumed. The ingredients are placed in thin plastic bags, and the air is evacuated.
Yeah.
Then the bag is heat sealed. You mentioned nothing about vacuum, even though sous vide means under vacuum. And try this, Barry.
Yeah, I guess so.
A little bit of shop talk from sports. A crackback block.
Oh, a crackback block is where typically a guard or some pulling member of the offensive line comes around and catches somebody who has been allowed to slip through the line basically from behind, and it's terribly painful.
Not only is it terribly painful,
it's illegal.
It's illegal. That's exactly what it is. It's from football. Nice description, actually. It's an illegal block delivered from the back by an offensive lineman who left the area of play and then kind of snuck back in and wallops the guy from behind. And that's a crackback block. And Andy Cawthorn did it to me when I was a senior in high school, and I have not been the same since. I was thoroughly rearranged when that occurred. And thanks so much to Bob Perlstein of nearby Newton for giving us that round. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from Southern Rail. It is the first, a little round of applause there for Southern Rail. It is the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will get a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Francine if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Uri. O-U-R-I-E. Uri. Folks?
I didn't ask for a sunrise. It came up on its own. I didn't ask for the mountain. They just grew up out of stone. I didn't ask for the flowers that sparkle in the bright morning dew. All I wanted was a lover to hold me, and the Lord in his wisdom sent me you.
As we begin our 16th year, we wonder who will be the best Says You audience for 2012. Will it be the folks in Charlotte, North Carolina, that first weekend in January? Certainly the folks in Thousand Oaks and Riverside, California will merit consideration when we get there the middle of February. Info about these tapings and others on our schedule found at saysyou.net. SAYSYOU.
I've seen the stars in the evening as the sun disappears from the sky. I've seen the sun above the rain. I learned to sing and to cry. I didn't ask for October. It's followed by November all too soon. I didn't ask for the twilight or the glow of a pale harvest moon. Every day I'm reminded of the joy that surrounds me and you. All I wanted was a lover to hold me, and the Lord in his wisdom sent me you.
Says You returns after this from home.
In cases of sexual abuse of children, we often see warning signs, but only recognize them too late. Victims tend to know their abuser and trust them, and our instincts about what a sexual predator looks like in many cases prove wrong. I'm Brian Naylor, Profile of a Predator. Join Neil Conan next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
The World Health Organization is being replaced by the private sector as the main source of health services to the world's poor. What about conflicts of interest? I'm Armin Alme. On To the Point, drug and snack food companies, even the oil industry, are taking the lead in fighting disease. Will privatization reshape the global health agenda for better or worse? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock. Support for Says You and WPLN comes from the Nashville International Airport, offering a cell phone waiting area to help Nashvillians avoid crowds when picking up visiting friends and family. More information is at flynashville.com. And support comes from the generous support of Nashville Public Radio members. You can join our community of supporters by making a tax-deductible contribution at WPLN.org. The time is 9:20, 61 degrees in Nashville.
We are privileged to have with us tonight Jim Muller on guitar, Sharon Horovich on the bass, Rich Stillman on the banjo, and John Rock on the mandolin. Thank you very much, guys. And I also want to give a quick shout-out to Jim Rogers at WIUP in Indiana, Pennsylvania, who taught us how to get a hold of you. And thanks, Jim, for making this night real special for us.
We've always wanted to play Lincoln Center.
Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That is Evan and Kayla Goldstein from nearby Hopkinton. Thank you very much for keeping the score, folks. We have had a few moments with the word Uri. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Uri, an Uri is two-thirds of a cookie. An Uri? Really? An Ori is a circus contortionist who specializes in trapeze work. As in, there once was a girl named Lori who worked as a circus Ori. When she needed to twist, she flexed both her wrists and was simply impossible to ignore.
And at the bottom of all that, we have a circus contortionist.
Yes.
Is that, okay.
Could be it, or Arnie, something else.
Well, I think it's an adjective that might get you to become a circus contortionist because it sort of describes the feeling that you're going to get frostbite at any minute, or that you're just not dressed warmly enough for the weather you're undergoing. It's shivering with cold. You're experiencing an Ori experience. You're just shivering.
Shivering with cold.
I'm feeling Ori.
You're Ori.
Yes.
You're just shivering with cold. Could be it.
Feels Ori all over. Yeah.
Or it might be something else. Paula, what say you?
You know, well, I first read this before you gave me the pronunciation as an Ori, and I thought it's kind of like an owie, except it's a big group hurt or something. Actually, it just means out of it, vague, confused.
Out of it.
Ori.
Confused.
Or however
vague.
You said it.
Something, what I'm going through right now, actually.
Yeah.
Out of it, confused, vague. It could be that. It could be shivering with cold, or it could be a circus contortionist. One thing for sure, it is one of those three, and the choice, Francine, is yours.
Oh, I am dazed and confused. and I seek counsel from my wise colleagues.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah.
I'd go with the Ori just because it was so entertaining.
I mean, trapeze contortion. Yes, that was a big help. I go with the contortionist.
The contortionist.
There's nothing. There's no clue in this word.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Perhaps that's why he chose it.
Could be. Fine.
Let's go with Auri then. I think let's go with it. I've been afraid I'm a little Auri.
I fear that with no good justification, that is what we will do.
So you are choosing
the contortionist.
Carolyn, they are saying that an Auri is a circus contortionist. Is that in fact what it is?
Auri, please fake a definition.
Oh. That is a fake definition. All right, audience, what do you think?
Fake a definition and write a poem. Yeah. Pretty good.
All right, audience, what do you think? Well, Paula, it seems to be a landslide out there. The entire audience thinks that Auri is out of it, vague, confused. Is that, in fact, what it means?
Auri, or whatever you said. Please fake a definition.
It is not. Because the definition actually reads...
The University of Rhode Island buried between two vowels. Oh, no, it says... adjective, shivering with cold.
Shivering with cold.
I don't know
cold.
Where it's from.
Matthew Wilson of Salt Lake City, Utah, listens to Says You each week, courtesy our longtime friends at KCPW. He sends us a category of rhyming couplets. What two-word rhyming pair is brought to mind by the following clues? For example, a hobo's hindquarters.
Or bum's bum.
Bum's buns.
Or bum's bum.
I'm terribly sorry to disappoint you, madam. I point out this is the contribution of poor Matthew Wilson from Salt Lake City, Utah. All right, try this one, Carolyn. Angry student housing.
Angry student housing. Something dorm?
No.
Student housing would be...
Mad quad? What do you do? No.
Angry student housing.
Angry student housing.
Mad pad.
Mad pad.
Quad.
Student housing. Dorm, quad, hall.
No, it's not on a college campus. It's
not on a college campus.
House.
And
no.
It's student housing?
It's more about traveling.
Oh, hostel.
Hostel.
This,
that kind of...
These do not rhyme, however.
10 points. Well. Try this one, Tom. Albert's Remedies.
What?
Repeat that. Albert? Say the name again.
Albert's, A-L-P-E-R-T-S.
Oh.
Albert's Remedies.
Yeah, okay.
Albert.
Prince
okay,
Albert.
Okay, just a minute. Herb. Go
yeah.
With Herb.
Herbs?
Herbs.
There you got it.
Finally,
okay.
We got there, yes.
All right.
I was going with Marv Albert, and I couldn't find any Marv for that.
Herb Albert. Yeah.
His remedies aren't fit for family radio.
Yeah. That's right.
Arnold, try this
sure.
One.
Yeah.
Recipient of a tonsorial bequest.
Hair. Tonsorial. Sure. Barber.
Recipient.
An inheritance.
Inheritance, yeah.
Inheritance.
You're getting there.
I could go with that. Hair's hair.
Hair's hair. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Hair's
hair. Hair, yeah.
Hair
is correct. Try this one, Francine. Previously shaved mutton. Previously shaved mutton.
Lamb.
Previously shaved mutton.
Sheep. Mutton. Sheep.
Lamb.
Not sheep, not lamb.
Ram.
Not ram.
You.
There we go.
You.
Light up.
You really have some bad questions.
Previously shaved.
You. Previously shaved, used you.
Used
use.
Used
is exact.
You.
At this
even
point, it's water off a duck's back, ladies and gentlemen. Water off a duck's back. All right, try this one, Paula. A CNN gift spatula.
CNN. News. No.
Gift spatula.
Gift spatula. Gift
spatula. Yeah. Flipper. Anchor,
well, you think you booed the last one?
Flipper.
Gift spatula.
CNN.
Lifter.
This is not a rhyme, but it's just
cable.
You have it.
Cable ladle.
Cable.
No.
Gifts.
Turner.
That's
Turner,
exactly Turner. Right. Wow. Very good. A CNN gift spatula is a Turner.
Ted Turner.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Ted Turner. And finally, the hardest one of all, Barry.
I was saying right. Lister or Flips or something.
Poor Clerk Bob's tools.
Poor what?
Poor Clerk Bob's tools.
It's a Cratchit Ratchet.
Good job.
Or a Cratchit Hatchet. Can we get extra credit?
By the way, for the people who really know what's going on at CNN, that gift spatula thing was called an anchor spanker.
Well, I think we've gotten just about as much out of this category as we're going to get, don't you? But I really do want to thank the folks that send all these questions in.
The following 27 people.
And that was Matthew Wilson of Salt Lake City, Utah. Thanks, Matt, for being a good sport and taking it all in good stride. This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Carlos Cruzan of Miami, Florida. Carlos writes, I was a graduate student in history several years ago, and I thought I was pretty well versed in the subject. Until one afternoon, when I'm listening to Says You, and I find out I've been wrong all along. It was a question about the Battle of Ironclad Ships in the Civil War, but I can't remember why I was misinformed. Can you refresh my memory? We can, Carlos. It was a rainy day in Vermont in season 7 when we played that particular round of Not Quite. Michael Kramer of nearby Guilford, Vermont, hears us each week on Vermont Public Radio. He herein challenges us with a round titled Not Quite. We think we know all about the following words, phrases, or references. Why are we not quite correct about, Carolyn? Mm-hmm. The phrase, I'm feeling nauseous.
Because it should be nauseated.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you're right.
That is exactly right. Do you know why?
Yeah, sure.
Because that's correct.
Nauseous is a gas.
Yes. Fine by me. Right. Yes, that's right. Nauseous refers to the agent which induces nausea. You are, in fact, nauseated. In this way, nauseous and nauseated are parallel forms to poisonous and poisoned. So they're very good, Carolyn. 10 points. Tony, why are we not quite correct about the meaning of the lion's share?
Well, I don't know too many lions that really like to share to begin with.
Not very well.
The lion's share, I believe it's the lioness who does the hunting.
But that's not where we're going.
The lion who then comes in and takes possession of what's been killed.
You're actually on the right track here. I've never seen a more stunned expression.
Should it be the lion's share without the apostrophe S?
No, that's not it. What do you think the lion's share means?
That means a larger part, the largest part.
And you're not quite correct about that.
The main part, M-A-N-E.
Lion's share.
Yeah. Lions don't share.
No, do you know where it comes from?
Obviously not.
The jungle.
Do you know where the phrase comes from? From the audience. Anyone? That's exactly right. Aesop's Fables.
Yeah.
If you remember, from the Aesop fable, it means all of something. Not the greater part, but all of it. Because if you remember from the fable, the lion collects a number of animals to help him in the hunt. And after the hunt is over, the lion claims a third of the take because he's the king of beasts, an additional third because he led the hunt, and the remaining third because you try to take it.
I believe that's called the trickle-down theory of lion management.
Yes, it is. The moral of the fable is, as given, you may share the labors of the great, but you will not share the spoils. Arnie, why are we not quite correct about the Battle of the Monitor and the Merrimack?
Why are we not correct about it?
Not quite correct about it.
The
You mean we don't think the battle actually took place, or we do? I'm not sure.
We
I know
talk
what
about,
we thought.
Well, we talk about one ship made of iron, and it wasn't. Is that what you mean?
No, actually, they were both ironclad, but that has something to do with it. I saved this one for you, Arne.
It's because the South won it.
No, not to the guys at the bottom of the ocean. No, they didn't win that battle,
right.
No.
That was the Monitor they pulled out.
The Monitor limped off, yes. The Monitor limped off the Victor, but why are we not quite correct about it?
Because they actually didn't fight each other.
No, they did. They did fight each other.
Because you made up the question. I have no idea. I have no idea what we think about. So, I mean, when you say the Battle of the Monitor and the Merrimack, it's the Civil War.
We think that the Monitor won.
And the Monitor won. It limped off to victory, as you say.
Does the other side have any idea?
Did they fight more than one battle?
They did not. No, it was one battle. Anyone from the audience know? That's it. Well, we got a sharp audience on our hands. Is exactly right.
What?
It is called, the Merrimack is actually the Virginia.
Oh.
The Merrimack was the name of the ship it was before it was scuttled, then raised, and then clad with iron. Otherwise, why would a Confederate vessel be named after a river in Massachusetts and New Hampshire?
I see.
So it was identity theft.
Yes. The Union ship was the Monitor. However, the name of the second ship was the Virginia.
Okay.
It was the skeleton, of course, was the Merrimack.
Very good.
Try this one, Francine. Why are we not quite correct about eking out a living? Not quite correct about that. What misconception do we have?
Could it be one of those bizarre measures of a unit of volume or
oh,
something?
Oh, what a great guess.
Like
give him 5 points for that.
Or
an eek.
An eek, yes. 2 weeks. Two weeks is a pinch. I don't
2 weeks is a living. And
what do you think it means?
Scraping by.
Just barely getting by.
Right.
You're not quite correct about that.
Okay.
Have anything to do with how a ghost spends his time?
No.
Is eking more along the lines of a near miss?
No, but I'm going to give you another 2 points because you did know the meaning of it. And does anyone from the other side have any help on this?
What do you think?
I'm going to turn to our very intelligent audience. Audience, do you know why what the real meaning of eking out a living is? It is, according to Mr. Kramer... eking out a living, we use it to mean to barely make a living or just squeak by. However, to eke out a living is to improve one's circumstances or expand one's living. For example, to take a second job or something like that. So that's
how do we know this fellow was right?
Eking out a living is barely making it, isn't it?
Are you taking him at his word?
You're taking
only?
Him at his word?
I'm taking the man at his word. So he's from Vermont. What do you want me to do? In fact, is he in the audience today? Oh, sure, when the heat's on, he doesn't show up. Okay, fine.
I'm not so sure about the source.
We've checked, and it is. That is what it means. So.
Really?
2 weeks, I don't know.
Paula, why are we not quite correct when we use the phrase livid with rage?
Oh, dear, lividity. Oh, livid.
What does it make you think of?
Well, it makes you think you're just beyond furious. That's what it makes
red
you think
face.
Of. Red in the
purple.
Face.
Red in the face. That's exactly what it makes
sort of
you think of.
Or brown
and it's
or
not.
Something.
However,
is
lividity is when the blood settles.
When the blood
right.
settles.
So you're not red
according
in the
to
face.
Gravity, so it actually is drawn out of your face.
Yes.
That is exactly right. Leaving
hit that bell.
So you would have a white color? Face. Ring that bell.
Ring that bell.
Leaving what color behind?
White.
White, or depending
well, depends on the person
you have.
You know
well,
yes,
what?
Depends on who you are.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Hold it.
Devoid of red.
You know what? I'm going to give him the 10 points.
Okay. Thank
you.
Livid with rage. When used in phrases such as a face livid with
yes.
rage, it's
oh,
often
man.
Assumed to mean bright red. However, livid means pale gray. For example, the color of an old bruise.
You know what I thought it was when I first heard it? I thought it was liver with rage. And it was what they tried to hit me with every Thursday for dinner.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
So you need it. It's good for you.
Sort of like foie gras.
Liver with rage.
You
liver
stand up in the rage. Potted plants in my
yes.
house.
And finally, Barry, why are we not quite correct when we think about Big Ben?
Big Ben?
Yes.
Why are we not correct?
Yes. Not quite correct.
Think about Big Ben.
What do you think it
because
is?
Because Big Ben, is there a difference between the clock and the tower? Is that where we're going here?
Almost. So, in other words, you're thinking of the clock and the tower
there's
in London.
There's the clock and the tower in London.
Right.
But when we think of Big Ben, that is not exactly where Big Ben is.
Well, it's in the tower, but it's not the clock.
In the tower. The Big Ben is the bell, actually, not the clock.
Yeah. Ooh, 10 points. Wow. Very good.
Excellent.
Well.
Big Ben is the largest 13-ton bell in the tower. That's what Big Ben is. And here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give you a distinguished bell, yes.
Little Ben.
Has anyone else noticed that the bell is completely given out over the course of the show?
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Arnie, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Please create a definition for the word pandy.
Pandy.
P-A-N-D-Y. Pandy. Folks?
Swing home, swing home, sweet chariot. Come for to carry me home. Swing home, swing home, sweet chariot. Come for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan and what did I see? Come for to carry me home. A band of angels coming after me. Come for to carry me home.
Says You's caravan of cajolery stops in Charlotte, North Carolina, this January 7th and 8th for Charlotte Rambling, Tar Heel Tomfoolery with Says You. Then the weekend of February 17th, it's off to Southern California for shows in Thousand Oaks and Riverside. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, January 7th and 8th in Charlotte and the weekend of February 17th in Southern California, live performances of Says You. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, Huffington Post religion editor Paul Rauschenbusch. He opens up a forgotten impulse of social activism in the DNA of American Christianity, the social gospel, which was led by his great-grandfather, Walter Rauschenbusch, a century ago. And he shares what he's learning about religion on this century's emerging frontier of technology. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers.
You know, people develop strong attachments to their cars.
Yeah, and it's very hard to tell them. It's time to move on.
Something my brother's heard from every one of his wives.
Anyway, we have a way to ease the pain a bit. Now you can donate your car, and the net proceeds from its sale will benefit this station.
Interested? We thought so. Here's what to do.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org. Support for Says You on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from Whippoorwill Farm Day Camp in Williamson County, where campers ages 6 to 15 can choose from a variety of activities like pottery, rappelling, and creek walking. Registration begins January 9th. Information available at whippoorwill.com. Time is 9:44, 61 degrees in Nashville.
That is Southern Rail. Thank you so much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word pandy. We will go first to a studious-looking Tom Kemp.
This word derives from ancient times, Saint Pandy. And there are many schools that are not in this area that are called Saint Pandy. And it's a punishment, actually, when someone acts a little randy or something like that. And they are beaten on the hand with a stick or a cane. It's a punishment, is to pandy.
To punish?
To beat on the hands, you know, with a stick or
with
a cane.
Stick.
Oh, like the nuns taking the ruler and
I didn't know if
away.
You wanted to go that explicit, but yes.
Well, having had the experience, I think I can go
yes,
there.
Pandy.
It means to get whacked on the hand with a stick.
With a stick.
Is to pandy. To pandy, whack somebody handy. On the hand, I guess, is the verb. It could be that or it could be something else, Francine. What say you?
A pandy. A pandy is a verb, and a pandy is a street beggar.
It's a verb? That wouldn't be a verb.
I'm sorry, a noun. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I haven't even been here all day.
A pandy is, I'm sorry?
A street beggar.
A street beggar is a pandy.
Yes.
That could be it. Short, sweet, simple, could be it. Or it could be something else. Barry?
Pandy, treats for cute bears.
Yes. Yes.
Actually.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was kidding. Pandy is a sherry-based fruit punch.
A sherry?
Popular in Scotland.
Yeah. A sherry-based fruit punch. So you could get loaded on pandy.
You could get hammered on pandy.
You can get hammered on pandy.
With a shandy chaser.
Yes. Yeah.
Shandy could be. It's either that or a street beggar or to get hit on the hand with a stick.
Yeah.
It's one of those three, and the choice, Arnold, yours.
Hello?
Well, when I was growing up, that beating on the hands with a stick was just called corporal punishment, you know? And,
yes, but you live in sophisticated Massachusetts.
I don't know. Those nuns weren't
you know, someplace else it could be, pandy the guy.
Give him a pandy.
Hit him on his handy. You hit him on his handy.
Hit him on his handy.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
so not the,
street beggar is like a panhandler. Maybe it is a slang term.
Panhandler or pander.
Pander.
Or a cherry-based fruit drink.
Never
get hammered on. No?
We never heard that before, because we never heard anything before for the last 15 years.
Never heard any of these words.
Never these, I mean, I don't
actually,
know.
Actually, how many words do you think that we've actually known?
You maybe know, two.
Known?
Yeah, when
maybe,
I've given you the word
when
you
we had to disqualify, maybe two.
Yeah.
You think?
Maybe
two.
Yeah,
two or
totally.
Three.
Not many, I know that.
No,
not many.
Zarf, I remember when you asked.
Zarf
that.
Was
yeah.
one of them, yeah, I remember
Zarf,
that.
Zarf, yeah. So what are you doing, Arne?
I'm thinking it might be to beat with a stick.
On the hand.
Gee, I don't think so.
All right, what are you going for?
I'm going for the sherry-based fruit punch.
I'm going for the hand.
Okie dokie.
Okay, you can, you know, do this. You ready? I'm going with... We're going with Tom.
Okay.
Tom.
Simply because two of us are saying it.
Yeah. Tom, they have come to the not quite unanimous decision.
No.
That well. Pandy is to beat on the hand with a stick. Is that in fact what it means?
Pandy. To beat on the hand, especially with a cane or stick.
That's what it is.
No, I didn't.
Boy, that is one happy Paula Lyons, don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? Look at that.
Why am I happy? I mean, I had it wrong.
Let's go on to round five. There are so many jerks around. Here are six. 10 points each for filling us in on the facts. Carolyn, what puts the jerk in jerk chicken?
What puts the jerk in jerk chicken? A combination of spices, including allspice and
paprika,
thyme,
something peppery,
nutmeg.
I want to know what this one thing is here. There's cayenne. One other thing that I have.
Cayenne.
Nutmeg isn't jerk chicken?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Soy sauce.
Cayenne pepper.
Cinnamon, hot
yeah,
pepper.
And pepper. You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points, but then I'm going to ask you, what are Scotch bonnet peppers?
Oh, Scotch bonnet peppers are very hot peppers.
Very hot peppers.
That you use for...
I have never heard of that, and, you know, I'm not surprised.
They're very hot peppers.
Okay. Yeah.
Tom, what is the definition and derivation of a jerkwater town?
A jerkwater town?
Yep.
I really don't have a clue.
It's an insulting name for a small town that means there is nothing of interest in this town. There are no redeeming qualities to it.
But where does the jerk come from?
And the jerk water?
Yes, jerk water town.
Would be, that was the kind of town in which you could sell those fake medicines on the back of wagons and call it something, and all it is water and alcohol.
That is just a fabulous guess. Completely wrong, but a fabulous guess. You're getting points for that.
Have something to do with the small stream that the town might have been in.
A pump.
Bad water.
Well,
pump.
Not a pump per se, Francine, but something about getting water. That's for sure.
Well, having to use a well because they didn't have plumbing.
That is another great guess. It's wrong, but it's a great guess. Anybody?
Does it have anything to do with the saloon?
Not the saloon.
The salon.
The salon, yes.
The sewer.
Anybody want to give a little help
Wyatt
here?
I remember Wyatt Earp talking about, where's the salon in Tombstone?
Anybody from the audience? Trains.
Trains.
Is exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 6 points for your effort. That's
Trains.
True because you got 5 points for knowing that a jerkwater town is a small and unimportant community. And it is a little bit about pumping water, but if your town didn't rate a water tower, the crew had to dip buckets into nearby stream and jerk that water up into the engine for a stream. Also, the station personnel would not maintain it. There was a long chain on which you could pull if you were on that train and let water into the engine, and that's where you get the term jerk water town. No one would come out to help you. So that's where that comes from, and I hope we all learned a little something.
We did.
Try this one, Arnie. Probably all humans have experienced the hypnic jerk. H-Y-P-N-I-C. The hypnic jerk. What do you suppose it is?
Sneeze?
No, it is not a sneeze.
It's a hiccup?
No. It's a real jerk.
It's a real jerk. Hypnic?
I loved finding this one out. You're
going to
like
this. Your body goes through a jerk.
Yeah, your body really does go through a jerk.
Is it when you're just about to fall asleep?
And
then,
you're
sort of jerk yourself?
You dream that you're
falling.
That's
exactly what it is.
That happened, yeah.
That's very good, Carolyn. Nice job.
There's another name for that.
What is that?
It's also referred to as a myoclonic jerk.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It is that... you're just starting to fall asleep or, and all of a sudden you awake with a start because you thought you were falling.
Yes.
That's what it is. It's the brain and the muscles out of sync and the muscles trying to relax while the brain is interpreting that as falling. And that's how that comes about. That's what the hypnic jerk
nice
is.
Nice to know.
Francine, if you were doing a clean and jerk, what were you doing and how would you do it?
Remember your bodybuilding experience?
Yeah.
Those guys that you saw, they did a lot of that.
That a clean and jerk.
Is it a pose?
No.
Show us the pose you mean.
Show the radio audience
the pose
you have. A clean and jerk
is where the bodybuilder squats down, grabs the bar with his hands, and in one swift movement brings it up to where it rests on its hands at shoulder length, and then with another sort of dip and push, he pushes it up directly over his head.
And which part is the jerk?
Anybody that would spend a lot of time learning it.
10 points. That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
The jerk is the part where you put it over your head.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The jerk, the...
I lift things up and put things down.
That's exactly right. The clean phase is when you do the squat and you pull it up to your shoulder level, and the jerk is when you push it up over your head. Try this one, Paula. Why would Don Julian and Navin R. Johnson be included in this category? Don Julian and Navin R. Johnson.
Did they write that song, Cool Jerk?
R.
Well, you're very close.
They invented beef jerky?
No, you're very close with Don Julian.
Don Julian, that's sort
he
of
was a songwriter?
Name.
Yes, he was.
He was
a dance?
Do the Jerk.
Do the Jerk.
That's exactly right. Don Julian wrote that. What about Navin R. Johnson?
He wrote the words.
No, he did not.
He created the dance.
He created the dance?
No, he did not.
He's not the choreographer of that.
He has nothing whatsoever
thing.
To do with the song.
Why is he in the same question?
You tell me.
Okay, so on...
He's Don Julian's real name.
No, Navin R. Johnson.
He is the jerk. The other one did the jerk. No.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's right.
Oh. I'm not sure what
you know who Navin R. Johnson is over here?
Is it the movie?
Jerry Lewis.
It's the movie.
Oh, Jerry Lewis.
The movie. It's the movie with Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
Oh, right.
In the jerk.
Navin R. Johnson.
Right, yeah.
So one of them danced the jerk, and
the other one was the jerk.
Was the jerk. And finally, Barry, put a cap on this. What's the best use of a jerk meter?
Jerk meter. I love
it. If you sign up for eHarmony.
And it doesn't go so well.
Is a jerk meter a thing that measures sudden movements?
It does. I don't know how he knows these things.
There's a thing in clinical psychology where you study the behavior of animals, and there's a thing that sort of will measure whether or not they're moving around. And if you expose them to loud noises or stimuli, you can see how strongly they react.
You know, that's not the use here. We're thinking of the use in physics. Do you have any idea what a jerk is in physics?
It's a small subatomic particle.
No, it is not.
But that was a really good
guess. It's a measure of movement.
Yes, it is. It's a jolt, a surge, or a lurch. Okay, it's actually the rate of change of acceleration. It is measured in meters per second cubed on a jerk meter. But I'm going to give you 7 points for that because you did use it. It is used in many, many disciplines. That 7 points gives you a very respectable 77-point total. But it wasn't enough. 106 points for this week's winners, Mr. Arnold Richman's team. Wow. You got everything today. That was a perfect. That's a perfect day. 106 points, isn't it? That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Neil Feinberg and all the folks at Bemis Hall here in Lincoln for making it so much fun. And thanks for you guys for sitting through show 4. I am so glad we made it together. I just think it's great. Sharon Salkin write the show. Antonio Oliard captures the moment. And Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. And once every few weeks, we remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Lincoln, for showing up. See you next week. You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net.
Benjamin, give them the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs. Listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Natural Christmas trees are 100% biodegradable, recyclable, and contain no materials made with petroleum products or PVC. The Tennessee Department of Agriculture offers a reminder that natural Christmas trees are grown on farms where replacement trees are planted for every tree harvested or transplanted. Choosing locally grown trees reduces the carbon footprint spread by trees transported over long distances. A list of local Christmas tree farms is available at picktnproducts.org. Find it on a Tennessee farm.
Nashville weather for today, showers and thunderstorms likely, and cloudy skies with a high near 70 degrees. Right now it's 61 degrees in Nashville, and the time is 10 o'clock.